Tunisia's main opposition leader is behind bars. Rachid Ghannouchi is accused of plotting against state security. This comes as President Kais Saied intensifies his crackdown on opponents after granting himself greater powers 2 years ago. So what's next for the country where the Arab Spring began and for its opposition movement? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Fully Batibo. A judge in Tunisia has ruled the leader of the opposition Ennahda Party must stay in prison before facing trial on charges of plotting against state security. Rachid Ghannouchi is the latest among journalists, trade union leaders and other civic society figures to be held. His party's offices have also been shut down. The opposition leader is the highest profile opponent of President Kais Saied to be arrested so far. The 81-year-old head of the Ennahda Party spoke before he was detained and said Tunisia is now a dictatorship.
The battle in our country is between democracy and the dictatorship that wants to confiscate all the gains of our blessed revolution. The legal cases against us are empty and meaningless, according to legal experts. The problem in our country is not with me, the unions or other parties. The problem in Tunisia lies with the dictatorship and this brutal coup that is pushing the country towards more calamities and famines.
While there have been a lot of international reactions to the latest events in Tunisia, Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has expressed concern over the arrest of Rachid Ghannouchi. Malaysia's foreign ministry said it was deeply concerned. In the West, the U.S. condemned the arrests of critics, while the European Union underlined the need for fair trials and respect for the rights of defendants.
The federal government is monitoring domestic political developments in Tunisia with great concern. We see the erosion of democratic structures, the ever further narrowing of civil society engagement. The arrest yesterday of Rachid Ghannouchi is one in a worrying series of arrests of representatives of the Tunisian opposition, journalists, and activists this year. Whatever the Tunisian people are doing, whatever democratic rights and freedoms they have bravely fought for, all of that is now obviously up for discussion. We again urge the Tunisian government to uphold the general principles of the rule of law, the right to a fair trial, and freedom of expression. Political pluralism must continue to be possible in Tunisia.
Well, let's take a look at what's behind the political instability in Tunisia. Kais Saied was voted in as president in 2019 after securing 73% of the vote in a runoff election. 2 years later, he sacked his government, suspended parliament, and awarded himself the power to rule by decree. In June 2022, he fired dozens of judges. The rest of the judiciary went on strike in protest. The following month, a new constitution backed by Saied was passed in a heavily boycotted referendum. A parliamentary election in December saw another record low turnout of voters. Since early February, the government has arrested more than 20 political opponents and public figures who've criticized the president. And Tunisia faces other challenges. The economy is under severe pressure, hit hard by the pandemic and global factors. Talks with the IMF have stalled, and President Saied has rejected the terms of a new $1.9 billion bailout deal. Farmers say a severe drought is threatening its grain harvest at a time when alternative supplies are being affected by the war in Ukraine. Water distribution to many areas has also been hit. Well, we asked the Tunisian government for someone to join us for today's program, but it declined. So let me bring in our guests. In Tunis, we have Alicia Volkman, a journalist and photographer with a focus on North Africa and the Sahel region. In London, Kawther Ferjani, an activist and the daughter of jailed Tunisian politician Saied Ferjani. And in Paris, Amin Snoussi, a political analyst and independent journalist from Tunisia. A warm welcome to you all. Thank you for joining us. Alicia, let me start with you in Tunis. There's been, as we've heard and seen, a wave of arrests in Tunisia in recent months. But how significant and concerning is the arrest of Rachid Ghannouchi? Some Tunisian media outlets have said the reason for his arrest is because he made comments threatening a civil war recently.
This is probably the most high-profile arrest to date. And it's something that Haysai's followers have been calling for a long time, or they're anticipating, and certainly his advisors around the time of July 25th, his power grab, have been pushing him to do this, but he's held back. This was actually the 10th time that he's been brought in for questioning. Previously, he'd just been summoned, but this time they actually raided his house. So this is a big step up from where we were even a couple of months ago, that the modus operandi is now just to send police into raid rather than summon people in more sort of polite and judicially correct way.
What exactly is Rashid Ghannouchi being accused of?
The actual term of the charges is conspiring against national security. This is under the penal code, and it carries very heavy penalties, either life banishment or under Article 72, it actually carries the death penalty. So these are very serious charges, effectively, of treason against the state.
Kauthar in London, let me come to you. Your father, the MP Saeed Ferjani, is one of the leading figures of the Ennahda party, Rashid Ghannouchi's party, and he's also currently behind bars. Can you tell us what, first of all, your father is being accused of?
He's being accused of being involved in the Instilingo conspiracy, something that the judges themselves who have sent him to prison said that my father was never suspected, never listed as part of those who were part of this conspiracy. And they also initially only asked him as a witness. And it's only in the end that they decided to keep him. But we already knew that they were going to keep him, as Qais, during my father's hearing, said, anyone you have at the moment, you detain, or you will be considered co-collaborators.
So there are no specific charges against your father, just to clarify?
No specific charges from what I've been told from the lawyer. They actually said that that during his hearing, they thought that he may be involved and that they're looking for evidence. So they've sent him to prison while they find evidence.
Okay. Amin in Paris, let me bring you in. Ennahda, it seems, has been the main focus, the main target of this crackdown. Why do you think this is? Why is Kais Saied's government going after the opposition this way?
Well, he is choosing Ennahda because Ennahda is considered as the main opposition group in Tunisia because Ennahda and the few other political parties were the one that built the National Salvation Front, which was a group of a lot of political parties that were opposing Saeed's coup. And so he's going after Ennahda because Ennahda is his main opposition group, his main adversary. However, going after Ennahda is also easy for Kais Saied because he's been accusing them and accusing others of being the sole responsible of every crisis in Tunisia. Saeed's tactics are always based on scapegoating. So Ennahda is the perfect scapegoat for all of Tunisia's issues for Kais Saied because he can give to the people someone to accuse for their issues. He can give to the people someone responsible for their deep problems, economical problems, social problems, etc., etc. Saeed has always been using that against his opponents. The judges were part of a conspiracy. Ennahda is now part of a conspiracy. The National Salvation Front, MPs, businessmen, journalists, civil society actors, etc., etc. The main problem for Kais Saied in the next years will be that he's going to run out of people to accuse. He's going to run out of scapegoats, and as we are seeing now.
Yes, go ahead. Finish your thought, please.
As we are seeing now, we don't have an opposition anymore. The two or three persons that are left could be arrested any time. The whole group of the National Salvation Front, senior responsible of the National Salvation Front are all in jail.
And okay. Let me ask. Let me bring in Alicia. Thank you, Amin, for your response, and I'll come back to what next for the opposition in a minute. But let me ask Alicia a point that Amin brought up, talking about Ennahda being used as a scapegoat. And it's true that this movement and its leaders were also arrested under the previous governments and regimes in Tunisia, under Bourguiba, under Ben Ali as well. There was a crackdown against Ennahda at the time. A number of their leaders, including Rachid Ghannouchi, spent years behind bars. But it's not necessarily a movement that's popular among Tunisians, is it? Why is that?
Well, Rachid Ghannouchi, in terms of polls, actually polls very badly. He's one of the least popular politicians. There are much more popular politicians. One is Najib Chebbi, who leads the National Salvation Front, and the other, who's actually been the closest challenger in popularity to Kais Saied, is Abir Moussi of the Free Destourian Party. She used to be part of the RDC, Ben Ali's party. But the thing is that culturally, Rachid Ghannouchi and Ennahda represent something that there has been a constant narrative against. So both, you rightly said, Bourguiba and Ben Ali created this narrative that the biggest enemy of the state are the Islamists, and this has been repeated and repeated. And people have been brought up on this narrative. So it's easy to see him and also to sort of paint him as some kind of devil and demon. And it's really sort of split civil society and also the liberal left, who've been very anti-Ghannouchi. And they've pretty much sort of given a sort of passive consent to progressive authoritarian steps over the past 2 years because they are so anti-Ghannouchi. But there's not much of a call that's saying, OK, I don't like Ghannouchi, but this is wrong. This, I've only seen about sort of one or two people on social media, the cartoonist Z.
Why is that? Why do you think there hasn't been more perhaps protests from Tunisians to these moves? Are they supported? Are there some people who support these moves by the president? And why do you think we're not seeing... I mean, Tunisia was the birthplace of the Arab Spring uprisings, of course. Why do you think we're not seeing demonstrations like we did see back in 2010 and 2011?
There's a general disenchantment with not just democracy, but politics in general. The problem at the time, on 25th July 2021, is that Tunisia really suffered under the pandemic. And economically, and also the scale of the variant D, Delta variant, was such that in a country that's very sort of has big family ties, people were so touched by loss and grief. And at the same time, they were seeing a parliament that was out of control. You had violence, you had people attacking Abir Moussi. So people had really lost faith. So that's one side. Also, because the majority or the largest party in parliament was Ennahda, and the head of parliament was Rachid Ghannouchi, they were sort of easy targets. They've never had total majority politically, but they're seen as, you know, as having had control or having controlled Tunisia. So that's why they're an easy target to lash out at.
OK, let me ask Kauthar about this disenchantment with Ennahda, Kauthar. As Elisa mentioned, there are some who support President Kais's move to arrest some of the Ennahda party members. There are those who say that the post-revolution government led by Ennahda was a disappointment, that it was incompetent, that it was corrupt. What do you respond to that?
Well, I would say, like Eliza said, there was no point where Ennahda actually had total control of Tunisia. Even when they initially won after the revolution, they decided to be part of a coalition government, despite winning by an overwhelming amount. I think, again, like Eliza said, due to media constantly demonizing Ennahda from the moment they joined in the transition government since the revolution as the causes for all their woes, also not seeing a magical happily ever after the revolution, that also didn't help, and it was also blamed on Ennahda. Also, there was, you know, a lot of to clean up after Ben Ali, and that was also made quite difficult. And in fact, Ennahda didn't really have many powerful ministerial positions in the brief 10 years or so of the brief fleeting democracy Tunisia had. So I understand why they would blame an-Nahda, considering it's always been portrayed to them that an-Nahda was behind the, I don't know, their lives not becoming magically better after the revolution. And I understand the apathy amongst some, but right. I also think that a lot of people right now, there is a loud minority with the Qais supporters. I don't know how many Tunisians are really supporting him.
Let me ask Amin about that. How many Tunisians do you think are supporting Qais Saied right now? And, you know, what are your thoughts about an-Nahda? Who or what do you think took Tunisia off of the democracy path?
I think the lack of democratic culture is what led us away from the democratic path. There is a major confusion between political opponents and enemy. And I think that's the main difference. I personally oppose an-Nahda on a lot of things, and I've never agreed with their policies. However, that doesn't give you the right as a president to strip them from their right to participate in the public debate, from their right to have political figures, to have their freedom of speech and their freedom to organize meetings, et cetera, and et cetera. And that's the major difference that was not that Qais Saied does not believe in, that a lot of political actors before Qais Saied did not believe in. There were always people that were questioning democracy and using tactics that are close to dictatorships. And that's the issue. We during the 10 years we didn't communicate enough to explain the principles of democracy and the culture of democracy. When it comes to Qais Saied, I think he has a lot of supporters, and I think a lot of Tunisians support him, because we've been talking about the disenchantment of an-Nahda, but people are still believing in Qais Saied's promises, and Qais Saied promised a lot. Qais Saied promised new public transport. Qais Saied promised
medical cities.
Which
he hasn't delivered on a lot of these promises, though.
Of course, and that's I think the critical point. The
and so, why are people not again to the same question I asked Alicia a moment ago? Despite the fact that he hasn't delivered on these promises, why is it that people, Tunisians, are not taking to the streets? Why are they not protesting as they did in the past?
Well, it took 20 years to protest against Ben Ali. But I think the critical point is people are still believing Qais Saied because they are believing his scapegoat tactics. He always convinces the people that he didn't deliver because an-Nahda, because MPs, because lawyers, because judges, etc., etc. He always finds a reason. So the critical point will be when he won't have any more excuses to not deliver, and he doesn't have at the time, and he will fail to convince the people that that he's able to do anything for them. And I think that's the moment that people will realize and will understand what happened in the last 2 years.
Okay. Alicia, let me come to you and ask you about the international community's reaction, or some would say lack of reaction, to the events in Tunisia. Some would say that it hasn't been as vocal and united, and they haven't condemned these actions as they should have. Why do you think that is? Why do you think the response from the international community, from the European Union, the Americans to some extent, has been somewhat muted?
Certainly in Europe, there's a parallel sort of shift to the right. And there's a lack of confidence that there is a clear way back to democracy. And there's a certain amount of apathetic sluggishness on their part. So everything, as you say, is very muted. We're seeing much more close alliances between Tunisia and Italy, particularly those sort of bonded over the migrant issue and migration and border control. And more, you know, France and other states are seeing Tunisia as basically a buffer zone to manage some of their sort of external problems. We've also seen that Qais Saied is swinging towards Syria. There was a three-day visit this week by the Syrian Foreign Ministry, and there's also sort of more dialogue with China. So for both the US and EU, Their primary objectives are security-based. So for America, it's counterterrorism and military cooperation. And for the EU, it's about border control and migration control. So we're sort of, it's a kind of tyranny of low expectations that they want a minimum level of stability. And certainly for countries like France, they prefer to just deal with one key decision maker. So in some ways, it's easier to keep them in position.
All right. Kawthar, the response from the international community has been weak so far, some would say. I know you've made an appeal to the British government to intervene and seek the release of opposition figures, including your father. What exactly do you want them to do?
Well, we've actually filed with our lawyer to call for sanctions against Qais, two of the former interior ministers, the Minister of Justice and Minister of Defence. I think that's how we can start, and also possibly add more people, as any collaborators with human rights violations currently happening in Tunisia. I think that sends a clear and loud message, because talking isn't enough. Qais clearly doesn't care. We, unfortunately, like Eliza said, we're currently going through a shift, both in the UK and other parts of the world, where other parts of Europe, where we are going more right-wing, and immigration is the main focus in our policies. And so then they do kind of see Qais as a possible ally with that. However, under Qais, migration has increased.
Right.
So even on that part alone, he's not much of an ally.
Right. What response did you get, Kawthar, from the British government to your request?
Well, currently at the moment, we haven't had a response yet, but it's not been so. But things have escalated since. So we do hope that we do get something back very soon, because we're finally hearing a bit more of a stern word towards Qais. So maybe we're hopeful.
Okay. I mean, let me ask you about the same thing, the international community. We've heard the U.S. State Department expressing alarm over the arrests of Rashid Ghannouchi. Do you expect any significant action from the West if this crackdown intensifies in Tunisia? And why do you think that the condemnation from the West hasn't been stronger, hasn't been louder?
Because as it has been said by Kawthar and by Eliza, Saeed is the perfect ally for the far right in Europe. And we are seeing how the far right is gaining influence, imposing racist agendas everywhere. And Qais Saeed has made it very clear that when it comes to immigration, he allies with the interests of the European far right. He wants to do border control for them. So really, that's something the far right is looking at. And the far right has always been vocal about supporting Qais Saeed, even since the coup. They took position publicly in the European Parliament and supported Saeed's actions in Tunisia. And so when the far right gains that much influence in Europe, it obviously leads to political figures like Qais Saeed in the Maghreb, in the Middle East.
Alicia, let me come to you now and ask you about the future. I mean, Tunisia was where the Arab Spring started in 2011. There was a lot of hope for this country. This was the first success of the Arab Spring. And today it finds itself in this situation, an economy in tatters. They're still waiting on this IMF bailout. Whether or not it happens remains to be seen. What do you think the future holds? And does the government, does President Qais have a clear plan to bring the economy first back on track? And what are his goals, ultimately? What does he want?
Well, this is the biggest concern, is the economy, because Saeed has shown consistently that he's completely inept when it comes to both economy and a sort of more clear-headed foreign policy. What he wants, he has been completely obsessed with this idea of a new constitution and sort of unfolding his plan. But then he gets sidetracked with these sort of, you know, these crackdowns when he hits bumps in the road. The real concern is If the economy really does break, and we are seeing signs of this, we're seeing their national bonds dropping, we're seeing the lack of investment in agricultural sector, which is previously quite well invested in other areas, big companies are leaving Tunisia. So unfortunately, an economic crash is looking much more likely. Okay. And that could bring chaos, unfortunately.
Kawthar, I'm going to ask you the same question. What do you see the future of Tunisia looking like? And you know, what's the future for a movement like Ennahda, a movement like your father's? How does it respond to this crackdown that it's facing?
Honestly, it all depends on the international community. Because if things carry on as they do, Qais is going to run out of boogeymen to distract the people with. And I think he'll start targeting the average person that possibly complains about the price of an apple or something. And I think it's going to become more of a police state like it once was, and possibly worse. With regards to a party like Ennahda, I personally am not from the party. I think at the moment it's about concentrating on getting people out of prison, getting back to some kind of path towards democracy, and then we could look at the futures of different parties.
Okay. I mean, let me ask you then your final thought. What needs to happen to put Tunisia back on the path to democracy and stability?
Well, first, we need to do everything we can to get political prisoners out of jail. That's on the short term. On the long term, we need to be very aware and concerned about the narrative. Because if and when Qais Saied fail, there will be a political space. And we need to understand that Qais Saied is not something uncommon. There's a lot of populistic and far-right figures in the political landscape in Tunisia. And he gave them the perfect tool, this new constitution that can make anyone a dictator. So we need, when that time comes, to bring back on the table the importance of a parliamentary regime, the importance of separation of powers, etc. and etc.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for a great discussion. Elysia Volkman, Kawthar Ferjani, Amin Snoussi, thank you very much for joining us on Inside Story today. And thank you as well for watching. You can always watch this program again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJ Inside Story. And of course, you can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJ Inside Story. From me, Fully Bat Thibault, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye for now.